After creating the old world, I think he deserved it. I'm out here visiting with you lovely people and taking kids to Montana, and I feel like I need a vacation. I think God deserved a little bit more than me. And speaking of Labor Day tomorrow, how cool would it actually be to celebrate a Labor Day once a week, a true Labor Day, to take a rest from the work we have done, to observe one day and call it actually a Sabbath. I can see some of your faces somewhat contorting in a quizzical manner, saying, Brian, we have weekends, that's what they're for. But show me one man, woman, or child who does nothing for the entirety of the day and rests and worships for a whole day. I beg of you, show me one who can, and I'll end the sermon right now. That's right, I will disrupt the internal coherence of this Presbyterian pulpit and end the sermon in T-minus 1 minute. Can any of you step forward and show me that man, woman, or child? No. And if we're honest, of course we couldn't. We are a busy culture, as busy as ants who build underground metropolis. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, there is a great YouTube video that you can find of ants and their underground cities. It's remarkable. You have to see it. A day off, however, for us, simply does not exist, a true day off. What would we do with it anyway? We couldn't read that would constitute as doing something. Would we just sit silently, staring, praying? Please. No, instead, on our weekends, what we call our modern Sabbaths, we clutter it with all of everything else that we have to do. Laundry, food shopping, cleaning, whatever. And really, it's hard to condemn us. I'm not going to condemn you. I'd be condemning myself. When else are we to do our chores? Combining the rest of our weeks at our jobs with going to our kids' sporting events, visiting friends, and sometimes gracing society with our somewhat distinguished presences, we really have little time for relaxing, let alone resting or sabbathing. And yet, if we were around during Jesus' time, or even just of Jewish persuasion, then somehow we would have to make time for an actual Sabbath. We would need to let go of all that needs to be done. For an entire day, we have to do nothing at all but pray and rest and honor the Creator of all things. Especially during Christ's time, this was a serious matter, a serious event. The Sabbath was no joke. It was a rule of life to be taken as crucially as a doctor's order, a pharmacist's note. And in some of the more strict societies, its inobservance was punishable by death. Punishable by death. Can you just imagine that? You're out at the Giant or the local Piggly Wiggly, and some sort of man in black pulls you aside and says, I condemn you from doing work, and I'm going to report you to the authorities in charge, and off you go to be executed. Can you imagine that? The Sabbath, your day of rest, your vacation from labor, was simply not an option. It was a rule. It was a rule. Except for a Jew named Yeshua. See, often I think we have it all wrong about that Jew, Yeshua, Jesus. just look at our text from Mark this morning. Jesus knows full well what the Sabbath means to his Jewish tradition, especially at the time that Jesus was living. He simply do not do anything on the Sabbath. It was a day of rest and worship, that is all. And yet, in back-to-back events, Christ and his disciples are seen doing the exact opposite. The exact opposite. In the first occasion, Jesus is simply downright defiant. I mean, it's like a scene out of an 80s movie, with Jesus cast as a bad guy wearing a black leather jacket, his hair slicked back like the Fonz or some random Italian guy. Hey, we're hungry, so we ate some corn. What are you going to do about it? I'm the Son of Man. Well, he probably didn't say it like that. Presumably, you get the point, hopefully. Jesus knew that he was being watched over like prey. And instead of shrieking into the background, he thrust his ministry forward into the limelight so that it couldn't be ignored. Jesus declared himself in front of his adversaries, I am the Son of Man. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Who cares about your rules? I can walk through your garden. I can eat your corn. What are you going to do about it? Jesus was one cool, bad dude. And yet, this does not mean to declare to you today that Jesus was doing nothing more in his ministry than stirring the pot. Nor did Jesus disrespect the Sabbath, and this is important. For Jesus respected and honored it for exactly what it was worth. The Sabbath is for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is for humankind, for us, not us for it. People precede the Sabbath. And basic human needs trump everything, all the rules. So when rules are established by man and woman that limit its blessing, especially rules that disenfranchise others from receiving the grace of such a gift, those rules are to be ignored instantly and completely, and justifiably so. Which brings us to the second scene in Mark this morning. And one more time, yes, Jesus finds himself in trouble. But this time, what does he find himself in trouble for? Healing someone. Jesus gets in trouble for doing work because it's healing someone? Were the rules of the Sabbath really that important that it would be better to honor the letter of the law than the sanctity of a life of a man who was in pain? The authorities were so upset because Jesus didn't work on a symbolized day of rest and righteousness, and yet that work was healing someone. It's unbelievable, almost. And yet, look at how poignant Christ's response is. Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To save life or to kill? You get him, Jesus. You get him. And I'm telling you, that guy, Jesus, was tough as nails. Razor sharp in his retorts. He really was just one cool Messiah. And that is, in truth, the hidden message of this sermon. The point that I am trying to tell you is that Jesus is not just some engraved image with halos constantly circulating his head. Jesus was a real-life visionary, a revolutionary, who changed the system. Jesus was not just some, I'm going to go preach about this us that rules can sometimes be broken. And I say amen to that. For rules are sometimes inherently broken from the beginning. Their original purpose and intention flawed. And thus they then ought to be actively broken and ignored by those who are privileged enough to recognize such. Rules are sometimes just broken in their natural state. For remember, the rule that once declared that a man bloodied on a path was to be ignored was completely wrong. Thank God for the Good Samaritan. The rule that once declared that women are inadequate enough to vote was completely wrong. Thank God for the women at Seneca Falls. The rule that once declared that African American was three-fifths of a human being was so horribly and completely wrong. Thank God for Medgar Evers, the good Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and all of those inspired minds who were so determined to break that rule. Thank God. Thank God. Simply not all rules ought to be rules, nor should they be guidelines. Some rules are merely the waste of our polluted minds and need to be thrown away like the garbage they are and were. Now, of course, not every rule is evil, nor should they all be broken. We all know that. That would surely lead to chaos. Society needs rules. Individuals need rules. My mom's pious relative who used to drive through stop signs saying, those are God's rules. I mean, those are man's rules, not God's rules. She needed rules. Rules are built into the fabric of our lives, and thank God also for that. And yet, how many of our rules are so petty? How many of our rules have become obsolete? How many of our rules are prohibitive to greater causes? How many of our rules are prison guards to our calling? How many of these rules, then, should we really choose to follow? And that's precisely the point. For Jesus, that revolutionary, defiant, determined Messiah,